Well, welcome to First Response, our weekly look at COVID-19 and its intersection with all things religious liberty. I'm Jeremy Dice, one of the attorneys here at First Liberty Institute.
And I'm Justin Butterfield, another attorney here at First Liberty Institute.
Well, Justin, I thought things might slow down this week, but instead, we've been hard at work on responding to the many requests for legal help that continue to pour in each day from houses of worship and individuals across the nation.
We sure have. In fact, just this week, we permanently resolved the matter that we talked with you about last week involving churches holding drive-in services in Louisville, Kentucky. Judge Justin Walker entered a resolution agreement on Wednesday of this week protecting our client On Fire Church's ability to conduct drive-in church services.
And while that was going on, our colleague Keisha Russell sent a letter to Chemung County officials in New York on behalf of three churches who also wanted to host drive-in church services. And just over 24 hours later, county officials announced that they would no longer prohibit church gatherings by means of a drive-in church service. And I'm really pleased with that and both those results.
Me too. And for everyone listening, you can go to firstliberty.org to read more about both of those cases, along with the guidance we posted with last week's episode for churches who are thinking about doing drive-in services themselves.
Yeah, we have a lot of great resources there at firstliberty.org. And later in this program, we're going to speak with a very good friend to get his perspective on all this from something of a policy perspective as well. And be sure to stick around later in the episode after that conversation for a very special announcement that you won't want to miss. But let's get to our first guest, and perhaps she has a thought or two on these kinds of cases happening all over the nation right now. Vicki Hartzler is the congresswoman for Missouri's 4th Congressional District, which covers 24 counties in central Missouri. A wife, a mother, a lifelong farmer, small business owner, and former public school teacher, Representative Hartzler is also a passionate Christian. She entered Congress in 2011, but began her public service in 1994 when she successfully ran for state representative in the Missouri General Assembly, where she served for 6 years. In Congress, she serves as the House Armed Services and Agriculture Committees and as ranking member of the Tactical Air and Land Forces Subcommittee on the House Armed Services Committee. She's also the chairwoman of the House Values Action Team. And when not in D.C., Congresswoman Hartzler lives with her husband, Lowell, and daughter, Tiffany, on a working farm near Harrisonville, Missouri. Congresswoman Hartzler, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, you heard our introduction, and I'm sure you've been aware of situations like this throughout the country. What has been your reaction to the reports of churches and other houses of worship who, during this pandemic, have been on the receiving end of government officials discriminating against them?
Well, it's shocking and it's disappointing, and I think it shows where we are in this country with the rise of persecution of Christianity and how the world is pushing back against people of faith and the light. These tactics has just been like Gestapo, I mean, egregious, as we've heard about the governor of Kentucky and their order, and then on Easter Sunday, how they've targeted churchgoers there in Kentucky at the Maryville Baptist Church by coming and recording down the license plate numbers and of everyone who was car was in the parking lot, and giving them quarantine notices that they have to stay in their house for 14 days and take their temperature and prohibited from traveling. This is unbelievable when just a few blocks down the street you had cars parked in the Kroger and the Walmart and the liquor stores and people were going in there and no orders were issued there, but it just seemed to be targeting people of faith, and that is what we've also seen by the governor of Kansas with her statewide shelter-in-place order, which has just targeted churches alone but not other organizations, and the city of Greenville actually handing out $500 fines to people sitting in their cars on a Sunday. You know, it's just shocking, and it needs to be pushed back on, and I commend First Liberty for what you're doing to stand up for people of faith and to ensure that the Constitution is followed.
Thank you, Congresswoman Hartzler, and thank you for your dedication to religious liberty, even in the time of a pandemic. Let me ask you about Congress's response kind of on the economic consequences that have really affected religious organizations. A few weeks ago, the CARES Act passed, which helped direct some funding to religious organizations throughout the country. And this week, Congress has been hard at work on an additional relief package. What might houses of worship and charitable religious organizations expect from this latest relief package?
Well, it's going to mean that more churches are able to apply for some needed assistance during this time. It will allow them to continue to participate in the Paycheck Protection Program, where the government gives them a loan that is forgiven that pays the payroll for 8 weeks, as well as make some payments for rent and utilities during this time. And there's also an economic injury disaster loan that is available to churches as well. And I was pleased that the SBA and the Trump administration have come out with very clear guidelines saying that the religious freedoms of these churches will not be infringed upon because they participate in this loan program. And so I would encourage churches to participate. The CARES Act that was passed a couple weeks ago also encourages charitable giving by allowing individuals to deduct up to $300 in charitable donations. So there's some good positive provisions there to help our churches during this difficult time.
Well, we have a number of pastors and faith leaders and people deeply committed to advancing their religion who listen to these conversations. They've had to adjust, and somewhat severely, to how they exercise their religion these last few weeks. What is your encouragement to them as they emerge from lockdown and begin to reopen their ministries?
Well, my encouragement is that Jesus is still on the throne and the Holy Spirit is still moving in the hearts of people across this land. God is still hearing prayers and answering them. And my prayer has just been that God would draw people to him during this and that the church would be a light during this time of darkness. And the positive thing from this, if there is some positive things, is that it is, I think, encouraging our churches to get out of those four walls, out into the community, and to fulfill the Great Commission of go and make disciples. And that is what is exciting. People have been able to see the church as they've distributed food and as they've had these drive-in services outside. A wonderful story from home from Missouri was when a pastor shared that they had their drive-in service. And a woman was driving by on her way to a pharmacy and saw all these cars in the church parking lot and was curious what was going on. So she pulled in and was able to listen to the message. And the pastor, during that message, and was talking about how Jesus is here to help and minister to you, he asked them to turn on their hazard lights of their car if at that moment they needed to hear from Jesus. They needed a touch from him, and they were hurting. And the pastor said that hazard lights went up all over that parking lot from various cars, and this woman turned on her hazard lights. And as she left, she was able to talk to someone at a distance, but the members of the church was there in the parking lot, and shared that her marriage was on the rocks and she was about ready to make some bad decisions. But because of that church being out there and being drawn into that service, She wasn't going to make that bad decision, and God restored her heart and restored her marriage. And so that's what's encouraging. Let's continue to look for ways to be a light and to be Jesus's hands and feet in our community, to be his voice, to bring that message of hope, to bring that good news that everyone is so hungry for. We have a wonderful opportunity here, and I'm encouraged by that.
Wow, well, that's a great and really inspiring story, and it really shows a lot of the creativity and the church really coming together to help their communities that are in need at this time. One last question, Congresswoman. It feels like we may be getting close to the other side of this pandemic, and I was wondering, do you think that America has gained a greater appreciation for religious liberty through this pandemic, and what sorts of long-term changes for America's religious communities do you think that this experience is going to bring about?
Well, I don't know if it has a new appreciation for religious liberty or not, but I hope it has a new appreciation for people of faith. And I hope they've been able to see the church out there ministering and helping to others and encouraging people. I do think that from here on out, things will be different in a positive way, in that as we have gone to online services and more ways to reach people in creative ways, perhaps those will continue. And I hope that even more people have tuned in to sermons and things when normally they wouldn't have gone to a church building, but they tuned in, and they will continue to do that. And so I'm hopeful that we'll be even stronger going forward, and we just need to continue to be bold and compassionate and be faithful to what God calls us, each one of us, to do and lays on our heart to make a difference for Him that day. Each day we have an opportunity, and He wants to use us, and let's be willing to be used, and to Him we'll get the glory.
Well, Congresswoman Hartzler, we're very grateful for the leadership that you provide in Congress and the service you extend to the good people of Missouri. And thank you very much for joining us today on First Response.
You bet. God bless. Thank you.
Well, Justin, one of the benefits we have in doing the work we do each day is benefiting from the work of allied organizations, groups, and individuals that help supplement our legal work with the advocacy in both policy and in culture.
That's certainly true, Jeremy. And the Family Research Council is certainly one of those good friends, as is its president, Tony Perkins. Tony is the longest serving of the four presidents that FRC has had over the years, serving in that position since 2003. And in May of 2018, Senator Mitch McConnell appointed Tony to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. And actually, I had the privilege of hearing Tony speak at the State Department's Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom last year. Tony is regularly sought after in the media to provide critical commentary on the importance of family, faith, and freedom. And before joining FRC, Tony served in the Louisiana legislature and as a United States Marine, and he is also an ordained minister, actively filling pulpits around the country. Tony, thank you for joining us today, and welcome to First Response.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for the invitation, and let me just say thank you for First Liberty and the tremendous work that you all do. It is it's an honor to be able to partner with you on many, many issues as it pertains to religious freedom. So we're grateful that you are there, and so thankful for the partnership.
Well, thank you. And Tony, you've had the chance to talk with many of our elected officials, the Vice President, President Trump, and many faith leaders around the nation over the last month and a half that we've been in this lockdown. I'm sure that during those conversations, matters of religious liberty and the unique challenges that this pandemic poses to it have come up a few times. How would you describe those conversations, and what are your thoughts on how America is handling religious liberty right now?
Well, first, I would say that I have never experienced an administration that is so in tune with religious freedom, that first freedom. In my probably a little over 25 years in the political realm, having held office, having been involved in almost every level of government, this administration is absolutely committed to religious freedom. And I've had conversations with the president. I've had conversations with the vice president, the Secretary of Homeland Security. And one of the things we've been talking with them about, and they have responded, is to make sure that our local officials, our governors, which, as you have seen, this president approach this crisis from a federalism perspective, guidance, but allows the state officials to actually put in place the various orders. Now, that's been problems in some jurisdictions, but it's the proper way to do things. A one-size-fits-all does not work. But one of the things that we have had multiple conversations with and with this administration is ensuring they use their platform, their influence, to communicate to the governors and to the mayors that pastors, clergy, are essential personnel. And in fact, in the second iteration from Homeland Security on essential personnel and services, the clergy was in fact included. And the president continues to kind of push that message out. So we have an administration that's very friendly to religious freedom. And I think from a federal level, I give them an A+. When we get down to the state level, it varies. Texas, a state that First Liberty works very closely with, I give them an A+. They've put out some very good guidance. Other states, New York, Washington State, not so good. California, not so good. And then you get some jurisdictions like Vicki Hartzler was mentioning, Greenville, Mississippi. The mayor there, or the governor, is good. The governor Reeves is good, but you have these individual elected officials that are using this pandemic as a smokescreen, if you will, an excuse to really clamp down on religious freedom. And that's where you guys come in, and you've done a great job.
Well, Tony, you occupy a very unique position of being an ordained minister, having the ear of the president, and working in the field of public policy domestically and internationally. As most, if not all, nations have formulated their response to COVID-19, how has the United States differed in terms of religious liberty?
That's really a good question. because we've been tracking this internationally, because some countries that are already given to hostility toward religious minorities, which in most cases are Christians. We've seen this in India in particular. We've seen, obviously, China is continually a bad actor. I think in the United States, it's been relatively good. And I would attribute that to the fact that we have a First Amendment. That's the distinguishing factor, is that we have a First Amendment and we are not timid about using it. And when I say we, that's you, that's me, that's the folks on this call, is that we will point to that and we'll say, wait a minute, you crossed the line. And that's why First Liberty is so important, because it's an intimidating thought for a pastor in Louisville, Kentucky, or Greenville, Mississippi, or wherever they might be, to go into the court and take on a mayor. But when you have allies, individuals that are knowledgeable and experts in their field that will come in and say, no, we will take care of that for you because we're going to protect the First Amendment. That's what makes the difference. And that's why it's so important that anytime that line is crossed, that we stand up. Now, Jeremy, I'll be very clear from the very beginning. I have encouraged pastors, churches to abide by the CDC guidelines. In fact, I've met with pastors who were continuing to meet, encouraging them not to, because this the COVID-19 is real, and we need to address the issue of being good citizens in the community and keeping our congregation safe. But there is a line, and when that line is crossed, as it has been in some places, we need to stand up, and that's, again, that's why I appreciate our partnership.
Well, Tony, pandemics are hard to plan for, and I think even the best plans have to be adjusted as you go along. You've seen the lawsuits and letters that we've been sending all over the country to local officials who have discriminated against churches during this pandemic. As you just noted, we're not timid about using the First Amendment and protecting our free exercise of religion in this country. But local officials really shouldn't have to plan for protecting religious liberty either. It should really be ingrained. What has this pandemic revealed about our civic education and preparedness to preserve and protect religious liberty here in America?
Well, I think first off, we have to recognize that our republic is not given to spectators. It's given to participants. We all have a role to play in this republic of ours. And part of that is being vigilant to uphold the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And, I was just reading an article this morning about our education system where, 85% of our eighth graders fail when it comes to having a proper understanding of American history. Quite frankly, I think that's intentional. I think we've not been teaching them what our history is, and the fact that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights is the agreement by which the American people agree to be governed by their leaders. And so when you have an agreement, if you got somebody say you have a contract for somebody to paint your house blue and they paint it green, you're going to speak out when they break out the green paint. Well, the same is true when the contract that we are agreeing to be governed by is breached, we have to speak up. And again, that's the bridge that you provide at First Liberty in protecting these fundamental freedoms. And I would just say, as the future goes forward, as we go forward into the future, I should say, my experience in the last 20 years, I've lived in South Louisiana. I commute back and forth to D.C. I pastored in South Louisiana. We've experienced in the last 20 years, I've lost count of the number of natural disasters. These things are increasing. The scripture actually tells us, Jesus tells us these things are going to happen. He said, but the end is not yet. So I think we need to be prepared for these continuing series of crises that we face and not lose our head about it. I think this is a great opportunity for the church to be consistent, to be calm, to continue to do the work of the ministry, and to protect those fundamental freedoms. And that's why it's so important we protect the First Amendment, is so that the church can continue to do its work. I would prefer not to go through some of these things, but I have found that, God uses them. In fact, his word promises us in Romans 8:28 that they will be used for good. We just have to be working according to his purposes.
Well, Tony, you're getting right to where I want to end this conversation. And let me just ask you to speak as a faith leader to faith leaders now. As we begin now to reopen the country again, what's your unique encouragement to them? What should they be considering as they lead their people in this unique time, having gone from lockdown back to in-person meetings over a period of time?
Jeremy, that's a really good question because, you know, the issue of leadership is so important that the pastors, the faith leaders, they need to be confident in the way they lead people. People are very, they're afraid. They're uncertain about the future. Now, I think as Christians, we have no reason to be fearful. Now, we don't know what the future is going to be, but we know the promises of God and that he is faithful to those promises. And so I think, first off, we need to think through our plans as pastors. We need to think through the plans and be very systematic in those plans, exuding confidence in what we're doing. And I think there is a way to move toward opening our churches, and I think it's time to begin that planning if you haven't already. And there's some best practices. Number one, I know you have a lot of this up at your website. We've got some of this at our website as well at frc.org/church. But there are, we put out just actually today published a document on how to reopen the churches and following the CDC guidelines and making plans. You know, part of it is going to be ramping back up your church. You may just have a certain percentage initially. That you need to encourage the elderly and those at risk categories to continue to participate online or have separate services for them. I mean, there's a list that you really need to consider, but you need to have a plan and you need to move forward with confidence. And look, this again can be one of the greatest opportunities for the church if we walk close to the Lord. And the confidence and the peace that comes from abiding in him is seen to the watching world. So Jeremy, I just say, you know, make yourself or avail yourself to the resources that First Liberty has, that the CDC has. And I actually talked to the White House about this yesterday, about them. I've talked to Dr. Carson. I think the task force may actually put out some guidance for churches to follow as well. Just to communicate that they want to see the churches open as soon as possible based upon the conditions in each of the jurisdictions. So it's time. You know, the Lord only kept Moses on the mountain for 40 days. At the end of this month, it'll be 45 days we've been in lockdown. It's time. It's time to open up our churches.
Well, thank you, Tony, for your contribution to this critical conversation and for your leadership for faith, family, and freedom. And thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you so much. And just continue to do the great work that you're doing. And we are so thankful for the partnership.
Oh, the feeling's mutual, Tony. Well, Justin, President Trump announced recently his plan to reopen America, as Tony was just talking about. I'm grateful that Tony mentioned the guidance that he's offered. We'll post that on our website at firstliberty.org later today as well. But the plan to reopen America gives certain guidelines and benchmarks, not only for businesses, but also religious organizations to start returning to some sense of normalcy again. And governors and state leaders are also starting to shift their responses as well. As Tony observed, some are doing it better than others. But in Texas, Attorney General Ken Paxton, which careful listeners will remember listening to him a couple of weeks ago on First Response, he recently announced guidelines that, as I read them, allow for houses of worship to begin having in-person meetings once more.
Yeah, that's right, Jeremy. General Paxton issued just about 3 days ago now, I believe, updated guidance for houses of worship. And we can put a link to that guidance up on our website alongside of this podcast. Now, that guidance makes clear that houses of worship can meet, but it also provides some common sense suggestions for churches and houses of worship that choose to do so. Things like continue to follow the CDC guidelines to limit the spread of COVID-19, ask sick people to stay home, wash your hands frequently, and consider a separate service for those who are at high risk for COVID-19.
Well, I hope that helps us prudently return to a sense of normalcy, and maybe there's some light visible at the end of this tunnel that it seems like we've been going through forever. And a few people have already sent questions to ask for FLI at firstliberty.org. They've been asking about when in-person meetings might restart and how they should go about that. And perhaps these documents that we'll post at firstliberty.org will help. But maybe even next week we can have a few people join us to help us think through that in a little bit more detail and about how we go about doing that.
Yeah, that would be a good idea. And I think we're all ready to see each other again and not just on Skype or Zoom.
Well, that's very true. But I think we're about out of time for this conversation. But we still have one more very important thing to announce.
Is this where we get to finally announce that Jar Jar Binks is actually a Sith Lord?
No. What? No, this isn't some forum for Star Wars conspiracy theories, Justin.
So then what could we possibly be announcing?
Well, we've been hinting for several weeks now that this teleforum might also be available on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, and we can now officially announce that what started as a weekly teleforum is now First Response, a podcast of First Liberty Institute.
Well, that is good news, and we get it. You know, sometimes life gets in the way, and you can't make it live for one reason or another, so a podcast is the perfect thing for those who can't join live for whatever reason.
That's right. Our hardworking team of writers, producers, directors, and technologists have been feverishly working behind the scenes at First Liberty to not only let you listen live each Friday at noon Eastern right here on this phone line, but now you can search for First Response in Apple Podcasts and subscribe to hear each episode and even share it with a friend.
Technologist, huh? That sounds like a cool job, but I don't think I've ever heard of that position, Jeremy. And, you know, I have a degree in electrical engineering, so I feel like that's something I would have heard of. I'm going to imagine it's something like an archaeologist, but who studies technology. Anyway, you can still listen to our podcast on our website at firstliberty.org as well. But we hope you will go to the Apple Podcast page and give First Response a 5-star rating and drop us a comment and support. We have a little competition going with Senator Ted Cruz to see if we can get our podcast close in rankings to his popular podcast called Verdict.
That would be a tough climb, but maybe we'll have to have Senator Cruz join us in a few weeks just to help with that.
Yeah, and I hear he's a Star Wars fan, so maybe we can discuss this theory about Jar Jar.
No.
Well, on that note, let me remind everyone that we'll be back next Friday at noon Eastern on the same phone number with another installment of First Response, a weekly discussion on the importance of religious liberty in the time of COVID-19. Until then, I'm Justin Butterfield.
And I'm Jeremy Dice.
And thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk with you again next week.